This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
I'm Wong Xiaoning, and this is The Breakfast Grill. Imagine suddenly almost 86 billion ringgit missing from the economy, money that was normally spent on tours, hotels and airlines evaporating overnight. That is literally what happened to the Malaysian tourism sector when borders closed as the country went into a lockdown in March 2020. This was followed by a challenging period as the industry depended solely on domestic tourism when it was allowed. However, as of 1st of April, borders have reopened and many of the restrictions were lifted. But is this enough to give the tourism sector that much needed adrenaline shot to revive, or should there be new policy measures? We find out when we speak to Dato' Sri Nancy Shukri, Minister of Tourism, Arts and Culture. Thank you for joining us on The Breakfast Grill this morning, Dato'. Was our tourism sector really at the brink of collapse with 3.6 million people at risk of losing their livelihoods?
Well, if we do not reopen, yes, perhaps it is going to really be very bad for the country. But perhaps maybe I would like to share with you what it was like before that, just briefly. We have been contributing to towards our GDP for 15.9%. That was 2019, and employment of 3.6 million workforce, and that is 23.6% of the total employment. So due to the pandemic and lockdowns, we suffered an estimated loss of tourism revenue for 165 billion. And we can't afford to allow that to happen. So we had our own recovery plan. We had a short-term recovery plan whereby during that time, we did a lot to support the industry players to survive. Mm. In 2021, we allocated 61 million a year to our 20,000 industry players, and that includes travel agents. You know, somebody asked me, "Well, Malaysia gives money to the company." Yes, we have to help our travel agents, our tour guides, spas across the country. And this year, it has been increased to 85 million to assist our recovery as international borders are already opening. Okay. And we also have midterm strategy, whereby we were given the trust to kickstart tourism in a limited way. That's why we started Langkawi in the domestic travel bubble. We also have our long term planning, whereby that's what the UNWTO calls recovery phase, which will last 2 to 3 years before things go back to pre-pandemic. But anyway, we have to start earlier. We have to plan earlier. So that's why we have to focus on, okay, we want to reopen, but what are we going to do? We do also have to look into sustainable tourism and high-yield tourism. So for the past 2 years, we have been working closely with our industry players to prepare ourselves to be resilient and adaptable. This is it we are doing in tourism. We have been working together with our industry players.
Dato, you mentioned that the government hasn't been resting at all during this period. It's actually been re-looking at the strategy of rebranding Malaysia. So, like they say, a crisis should never be wasted. So tell me, what has the ministry done in terms of repivoting the tourism industry?
When COVID was there, we already started having our strategy. We have the short term, the medium, and also the long term. So in this digital age, now I think I'm trying to bring you back to the Malaysia Truly Asia campaign.
Do you find that it is a bit tired, that tagline? Because even our National Tourism Policy 2020 to 2030 acknowledged that maybe existing tourism products are a little tired and unattractive. And it's a competition, right? We have to compete with the likes of Thailand, Indonesia, Philippines, Vietnam. Every ASEAN country wants the tourist dollar. So what are we going to do differently this time?
Actually, during my meeting with some of these ambassadors, they kept mentioning Malaysia Truly Asia to me. Of course, on our part, we have 30 Tourism Malaysians overseas. Mm. Offices have collaborated with influencers and also our KOL, key opinion leaders, on the respective markets to enhance our global campaign. And these have been very successful. I'll just give you one example, like our office in France. They said they have been receiving 15 calls an hour when we announced that we're going to open our border. So, but we have been promoting the country even in the way we talk. So they are aggressively doing that. But it's not just Tourism Malaysia doing that for us. We are also leveraging on the Muslim-friendly focused markets, partly by making ourselves obvious to international standards and bodies. And we also have MYSAP, MICEP is the Malaysian Convention Exhibition Bureau. Another focus is on the business traveller.
Okay.
So business event tourists spends 3 times more than the average tourist and has a large multiplier effect. Around 40% of them travel with spouses and 60% of them return as tourists later. So when you ask me about the numbers, that's why I'm a bit, I'm quite optimistic because this year we are going to bring in at least one event. There'll be about 7,000 people. So through MICEP, the numbers will be multiplied.
Okay. So Dato' Sri, it's clearly a more niche approach, right? A target approach to drive Malaysian tourism. So
right. Yeah.
On the back of that, is there then a shift in terms of encouraging quality tourists versus quantity? And even Thailand is looking at that, right? They are looking at attracting tourists with better spending power. So what are we doing in terms of that? Because I do see that under the national tourism policy, we want to have this demand sophistication. But what are we going to do differently?
Well, with regard to uniqueness of Malaysia, first, of course, I'd like to see our own strengths. You know? Each country has their own strengths and also their weaknesses. And I believe that focusing on our strengths will allow us to stand out like a sore thumb, regardless of what our competitors may have to offer.
Yeah.
So we have a diverse culture. Well, other countries may have as well. And we also want to create a special investment tourism development zone. So this will be another area whereby we will be trying to get more attractive incentives to drive the development of high-value, creative, inventive tourism and cultural products and services. Having said that, I think we have been also, if you heard us all this while, we've been promoting ecotourism.
I'm glad to hear that. There, like you say, ecotourism is a big thing, but isn't it more than that? Shouldn't it be sustainable tourism that Malaysia needs to focus on? We've got this United Nations Environment Programme and the UN World Tourism Organization. Now, they define it tourism that takes full account of the current and future economic, social and environmental impacts, addressing the needs of visitors, the industry, the environment and host communities. So yes, I see this is where public-private partnerships can take place. But you know what, Malaysia, we always like to think big. So we like to think that we need to build something big. Do we then need to change that mindset and work with small local tourism players?
Yeah, we are focusing on promoting sustainable and responsible tourism, including ecotourism, experiential tourism, because a lot of things that they can do. Community-based tourism. In fact, on community-based, we are even training the people to understand what tourism is all about. Because people are taking things for granted. But what is it that they can monetize as a tourism product? So we are also seeing a trend in which travelers opt to be closer to to nature. People now long to breathe fresh air, to feel the sand, physically feel the sand between their toes and to bask in the sunshine. Personalized and customized tours are also a selling point as travelers now prioritize their safety and prefer lesser crowds. But actually, we are training our tour guides to look into the rural areas, promote more. These rural areas, all these ecotourism destinations will also end up to be what the international tourists are going to look for.
Dato, related to increasing the depth of our tourist arrivals, i.e. a greater share of their wallet, in the national tourism policy to enhance demand sophistication and encourage these longer and multiple destination stays, there is supposed to be a restoration of air connectivity to traditional high-value markets. But I think here is where we fail. We fail quite clearly because we don't have that many, for example, European airlines arriving at KLIA. At the moment, if I'm not wrong, it's just KLM and Turkish Airlines left. Are we giving enough incentives compared to, let's say, Singapore or Thailand?
Actually, we are still talking to some of the countries, some of the airlines. We have been talking even before, it was last year, before we talked about reopening. I've already prepared some of them. But having said that, I think we need to speak more. We hope many more airlines will resume regular flights to to many routes in Malaysia.
Yeah. What incentives are you going to give them though, Dato' Sri? Because everyone is going to want to encourage more airlines to arrive on their shores.
Well, at the moment, we're only giving incentives to Malaysia Airlines and also AirAsia, Malindo Widin. This is Malaysian. But for that, we have not really decided on what we will be, what incentives we will be giving, because I think we need to talk to them again.
So which airlines can we expect to see, let's say, in the next 1 year or so? You know, which airlines want to fly to Malaysia?
No, actually, at the moment, we already have Etihad, Qatar Airways, and then, of course, Singapore. Korea, they are coming in, but not for tourists at the moment.
Okay.
A lot of the others that come in, they're more for essential service.
On the Breakfast Grill this morning, we are speaking to Dato' Sri Nancy Shukri, Minister of Tourism, Arts and Culture. When we come back, how does she manage more than 40 government agencies and local authorities related to tourism? BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. In the hot seat this morning is Minister of Tourism, Arts and Culture, Dato' Sri Nancy Shukri. Now, Dato' Sri, in the National Tourism Policy, I found that out that there are more than 40 government agencies and local authorities that are directly or indirectly involved in tourism. So my question, Dato', is the government-related framework for tourism too unwieldy for you to manage?
Well, it's not too bad, because we have been engaging with all our stakeholders, especially the state governments. And then we have been sharing with them about the national tourism policy. And then there will be a follow-through. Mm. There'll be labs going on, because we want them to understand more what we meant by the national tourism policy, and also the tourism investment zones, and how they can come in to assist. Now, of course, it is for their own states. So, of course, for the stakeholders, they might want to know maybe there's tax incentives, you know. This is something that we will be speaking to the government on their behalf.
So, Dato' Sri, who then coordinates all these agencies and avoid duplication or even competition? Because we have, for example, Tourism Selangor, we got Sabah Tourism, we got Naturally Langkawi. Who makes sure that all of them work together and not against each other?
State has their own niche, and they have their own specialty in their own state. What we are talking to them about is the principle of it.
Doesn't it make more sense then to bring all these government agencies or even local authorities under one government agency? For example, can't Tourism Malaysia manage the promotion of all things related to the country? Wouldn't that be a better path going forward, rather than have multiple state agencies and government authorities?
No. Actually, we are here. It is our responsibility to help promote the country as a whole. But on their part, every state, they have their niche product that they want to promote. So because with that, we cannot stop them from doing so. But this is the beauty of the Malaysia. We have to take advantage of what we have in the country, whereby different states have different products, which are also attractive and something that would be able to lure the interest of the tourists.
So, Dato' Sri, a frequent issue we hear on our show, from all segments of hospitality to even the F&B operators, is the challenge to find workers. My question is, why isn't hospitality a career choice that the government is encouraging? Should we not focus on human capital, which is so essential as part of the soft skills required in tourism?
Well, actually, I've been talking to some of the hoteliers, especially asking them when we first opened our domestic tourism. Yes, that was the challenges that they were facing with. So I did ask them, okay, what is it that caused this to happen? Because when they terminated some of their workers, they refused to work with the tourism industry, because to them, it's very uncertain. So it is not easy, but because we know that there are still thousands of people, Malaysians, who are unemployed out there. But the work mindset has shifted because of the pandemic. So we are working with the Ministry of Human Resource and also in hospitality, you know, universities, as well as our industry players, to address this. We are helping them we're supporting them through our Ministry of Human Resource to engage to get more of our local people as well. Actually, we have been asked to do job fair, tourism job fair. Well, we will do it. But the thing is, I don't know how much it will help.
We then start at the very beginning and look at it from an education perspective.
Oh, yes.
So
yes.
Offer hospitality as part of a TVET focus. You know, government's been talking a lot about TVET. A lot of resources have been poured into it. Is this not one way we can resolve the manpower issue that we have by training people from the beginning?
Actually, it is there. It is an ongoing thing. Even the lower level of the education, the tertiary level, they also provide, surprisingly, they also provide hospitality industry modules. But I think we must keep going, and we must keep making sure that, you know, this hospitality industry has to be something that the universities and all the colleges, they have to upgrade in terms of the expectations as well.
Okay, so Dato' Sri, under budget 2022, more than 20,000 tourism operators registered with your ministry were able to put in their applications for assistance, special assistance, with an allocation of 85 million, where the deadline, I think, for that closed on March 15. Can you give us an update of whether that allocation was fully taken up? And I'm also curious, does the ministry monitor where the money is really going, and is it used for its intended purpose?
Actually, they do not have to apply. For those who are already registered with us, it's automatic.
Okay.
Actually, I've just given out the grants recently as well, because we need to speed up, you know, make sure that they receive it and then make use of it. Because it is very easy, because we just transfer to their accounts.
Okay, but do you know whether it's used for its intended purpose?
Yeah.
Is there any way to monitor it though?
We have not been doing that, okay, because this is something that we have started last year, though last year it wasn't that much compared to what we have this year. This year, actually, there's an increase of the numbers. This is something that we need to monitor, because this year we are giving more, like the travel agents were giving 9,000. So the first batch, we give about 6,000 first, and then the second phase will be giving 3,000, but we'll transfer to their accounts. So far, we have not received any complaints on the tour operators who are, you know, we are ramping up enforcement as well. Of course, we have our own enforcement, which we'll never have enough in order to ensure all this.
Okay, because you know, it is still taxpayers' money, so there is concern whether the money is used for the purpose it's supposed to. But related to this is the special 600 million ringgit facility under the Penjana Tourism Financing and the BPMP rehabilitation schemes for the sector. But my question is, should the money be actually better spent on retraining some of the affected workers in the tourism sector? Because the reality is the tourism sector is not going to recover so soon. Full recovery may be in 2-3 years' time. So in a way, giving them more money financing may not work to their benefit in the longer term. Would it be better use for retraining?
Yeah, for Bank Pembangunan, that one is a loan.
Yes.
But for retraining, we do provide training actually. We also provide training for the industry players. So, because we have our own institute as well, where they are also registered. So, we do retraining, actually, especially during the COVID-19, during the break for 2 years, we even provide free training, and then they can use that. They also can use the they even did 5 modules, the intensive, actually, so that they can use the license for 3 years.
Okay,
so,
but is training still in the tourism sector, right? But I'm wondering whether we should actually train them to do other jobs, because if tourism sector isn't going to fully recover in the next 1 year, then basically maybe they're still not making enough to basically make a living.
Well, we provide training based on what our scope is, especially what is related to tourism. So that, like homestay, we do provide training for them. Of course, we give them the grants for them to improve their homestay. But training is what tourism is doing under MORTEC. Well, if they want to use their knowledge or their skills for other matters, they can still use it. Like a PR, you know, for their PR, if they want to work elsewhere with their the knowledge and the training that they have experience from MORTEC, they can make use of those training for them to do other work as well. So it doesn't stop. It's quite flexible.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Dato' Sri, let's talk about politics. You're MP for Batung Sadong under the Parti Pesaka Bumi Putra Bersatu, which is of course under the umbrella coalition of GPS. You have been an MP there since 2008. Are you planning to run again? Because it looks like GE15 could be just round the corner.
Well, in our case, even it depends on how people see you. If they want me to be there, then I don't mind as long as I'm still healthy, still fit to do it. But of course, the party has its own ruling. See, they might want me to be there or even move me elsewhere. So as long as I can still serve the people, it's okay. I don't mind. It can be Batang Sadong or elsewhere.
And is your party ready for elections? I mean, the broader coalition, GPS, 19 seats in Dewan Rakyat. Are you all ready? Do you think elections is around the corner?
Well, for us, election is every day. We have to prepare ourselves every day. So just like what happened during the state election, I've been asking, is the party ready? Every party is ready. Every politician must be ready for an election, as if election would be tomorrow. So every day we must think that election is tomorrow so that we serve the people rightly.
As a Sarawak minister, what do you want to see from the federal government in terms of assistance for the people of Sarawak? Because unfortunately, it's still one of the poorest states in Malaysia.
Well, actually, Sarawak needs a lot. That's why Sarawakians are talking differently. You know, they want the MSCC3 to be implemented because a lot of the things that have been mentioned in the constitution did not really materialize yet. Of course, now you can see we are improving. We want more. We want more. Sarawak is a big state.
Yes.
We need more development in terms of infrastructure. But I am thankful to the Sarawak state government because Sarawak state government is also pumping in a lot of money to improve. After the loss in 2018, after BN lost, that's where the state government started to use its own funds. You know, well, we are happy. Even though we are using our own funds, we still have our reserves kept aside for the rainy days. So it is an ongoing process for the state government now. Of course, you know, when you talk about developing areas, even building roads, the state of the nature in the Sarawak in terms of land, it is quite tough.
Yes.
It will cost in terms of logistics because of the land. Like my area, it's peat soil. We need more. I also know we need, the cost will be higher. It's logistics as well. So a lot of things that need to be done. And we, of course, that's what Sarawakians want from the federal government.
Infrastructure, yeah. More development funds.
Mm-hmm. And at the moment, even some of the areas, we cannot even reach them by land yet because of the greens, the thick jungles, you know, to reach, to build roads. But yeah, we cannot give up. It is something that we have to keep doing. And this is what we Sarawakians have been asking from the federal government. Now, I think it's time for us to be treated fairly because no matter how fair, what the government feels that they have been fair, the federal government feels they have been fair to Sarawak, but we still feel that it is not enough because the state government, the Sarawak area itself is so huge, almost as big as Peninsula. So this is where we want the federal government to understand why we're asking for more.
On that note, thank you for your time on The Breakfast Grill. Was Dato' Sri Nancy Shukri, Minister of Tourism, Arts and Culture. I'm Wong Shaoning, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.